This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Dr. John Neal. John serves as the Chief Physician Executive and in other leader capacities at the Honor Health System. Honor Health System is this great system that came together in the Scottsdale, Phoenix area, I believe, a few years back, and great leadership. Dr. Neal, can you take a moment and tell us about the system and about yourself? Can you introduce yourself first?
Sure. So I'm Dr. John Neal. I'm a vascular and interventional radiologist and practice clinically actually in this community for about 16, 17 years. About 5 years ago, I made a transition out of a kind of large medical group leadership role into a health system leadership role. And the system, as Scott mentioned, is Honor Health. We're a six hospital integrated delivery network based in really the North and Northeast Valley. We have three hospitals in the Phoenix market, three hospitals in the Scottsdale market, about $2.1 billion annual revenue. And we also have a large clinically integrated network of about 2,050 providers that really serves really more of an extended, even a more expanded primary service area than our acute care facilities. We've been here a long time. The system dates back to 1927. We continue to grow. We're fortunate enough to be in one of the fastest growing marketplaces in the country. So in some way, our challenge is just to keep up.
And talk about that for a moment, because you really are in one of the fastest growing areas in the country. I mean, the Scottsdale Phoenix area is growing like crazy. Does that create a challenges, opportunities, some of both? Talk about that, because you're fortunate to be in a market that's growing like crazy.
Yeah, it certainly creates it does create both. I think probably a lot of health systems that are in marketplaces with more flat growth or in many markets even declining growth would probably love to have some of the challenges we have. But in our marketplace, it's a dynamic marketplace. There's a lot of competition. A lot of the other health systems, really, frankly, all of the other significant market share health systems in town are bigger, attached with either national or large regional platforms. And so, one of the challenges is a more mid-sized health system is just making sure that we make the best strategic capital choices to take advantage of the growth, because we have a little bit less room for error perhaps than some of the larger systems that we're competing with. The opportunities are that there still are some relatively untapped emerging growth areas in our marketplace that are still underserved from from an ambulatory capacity, but in some cases even underserved on a bed per capita basis from an acute care standpoint. And it's relatively unique to our market as well as a handful of other marketplaces around the country.
And let me ask you a question on that, Dr. Neal. Is you compete with like the Banner Health of the world, which has become this very large system, very good system, well-run system. Honor Health also a magnificent system. Does it force you to try and be great in certain areas or certain ways to compete? Well, you had mentioned sort of $2.1 billion system, a large system by yesterday's standards, a mid-sized system by today's standards, but a great system. How do you sort of look at how do you compete versus these mega systems and so forth, and you pick your spots differently?
Well, I think you're really just touching on how do we strategically differentiate ourselves from the competition, and that's for anybody who spends time in the strategic role for a health system, that's always a $1 million question. And I think in our case, it is a couple of things. There's just as there's advantages to scale, there's also advantages to the nimbleness that we have. I think allows us in theory and hopefully in practice to perhaps move more quickly when we see unique market opportunities. It certainly allows us in the alignment realm, particularly the provider alignment realm, to potentially have a higher trust relationship with the provider community. We're locally owned. We're locally focused. We're even within a region within our marketplace. So our interests and our attention isn't always being distracted by something out of market, which is obviously not the case. We don't have to roll anything up to a national to a national headquarters to make decisions. So I think our ability to make decisions and execute quickly is a market differentiator for us. In terms of individual clinical services, we certainly have a need and are making ongoing investments in certain clinical service lines just to maintain a level of market excellence. You know, again, we have a unique market though. We have the Mayo Clinic here, tremendous national brand. And so it's always obviously going to be hard to outcompete Mayo for some of that quaternary care stuff. But we do think in the higher end tertiary care that we have an opportunity to differentiate ourselves in certain service lines. And then additionally, I think, because our system is a little bit more moderate in size and potentially a little more manageable, we certainly have an opportunity to differentiate ourselves in terms of just ease of consumer navigation. And, you know, we really have a desire to be, you know, not just patient friendly, but consumer essential, so that consumers just, you know, need us, rely on us when they want to tap into a healthcare need, they can dial up an honor health number and hopefully we can make it easy for them. And because of our size, we think that gives us some advantage.
Can you talk for a moment, Dr. Neil, about your career? You know, there's so much talk about physician burnout. One of the reasons, ways I see in which people avoid physician burnout is having these evolving careers. They're not just doing one thing forever, where they've moved into leadership, where they've done something else. Talk a bit about your career and advice you would give to others trying to have great careers.
Well, I appreciate the question. And I think you made a very salient observation in that there's a lot of reasons for physician and provider burnout. You know, the usual suspects obviously are, you know, the EHR or, you know, declining reimbursement on a per click basis, so people having to do more to make the same money. I think all those are true, but an aspect that isn't talked about commonly enough is just sort of the career arc of a physician versus the career arc of a lot of other professionals. You know, most professionals do whatever education and training they're going to do. And then for the next 30 years, you know, there's an opportunity if they so wish and if they're, you know, appropriately motivated to continue to climb the ladder and seek out new challenges and new opportunities. For physicians, you know, we spend, you know, more time on the front end and in a very intense training environment. Then we spend the first 3 to 5 years of our careers really kind of honing our skills and probably reaching, you know, the peak or near the peak of where we're going to be as clinicians. And at some level, then that's kind of it. You know, then it's just, okay, is that going to be enough to satisfy a lifelong learner for the next 25 years of their career? And I do think part of the reason that we're seeing so many sort of mid-career physicians burn out is because for a lot of people, it's not enough. And they need the addition, you know, the ability and the opportunity to grow in different ways. And I can't say that I had any sort of, you know, salient observations on that early in my career. I was just wired to always walk through an open door when there was an opportunity, a leadership opportunity, a major committee opportunity, a opportunity to become a leader and integrated, you know, in our clinically integrated network, or an opportunity to do a, you know, joint venture partnership with the health system for, you know, a technical imaging company. I just was always looking to participate in those opportunities, and that's kept me interested and it's kept me energized. And ultimately, you know, I wound up opening a door. So I took a really kind of a left turn into a completely different job in the health system versus being in a big, you know, private practice leadership position. So it's certainly been helpful and energizing to me. I would certainly encourage other physicians to know your, you know, to know yourself well enough that if you're somebody who does have a relatively short attention span, that you take advantage of other opportunities and don't fall into the mindset that you can only do something, you can only be on a committee if somebody's going to pay you an hourly rate for it. Sometimes you just have to put yourself out there and do some things, you know, based on being a professional and being a lifelong learner, and then that's going to create opportunity for you.
Well, I think that point is really right. If you're looking for opportunities to grow, you can find them every place. If every single one of those has to be monetarily attached to it, then it's much harder, and you really shortchange yourself by looking for the short-term money in the next role versus looking for how do I keep on learning and thriving and self-actualizing. I think that's exactly right. Now, I see people like yourself who've had these great careers but have done, as you call it, a left turn or a different kind of pivot, because if you're just doing the same exact thing for 30 years, that can be very, you know, that at some point, like many, many careers, that just can be very not as exciting, and it can be for some people, but it's much harder for other people, and to find these left turns, these opportunities, is fantastic. Talk about, John, what are your big three priorities this year? I mean, obviously we've got COVID work with it, trying to keep physicians and nurses resilient and excited, but what do you look at and you say these are our big three priorities this year?
Well, so you mentioned one of them, and I honestly don't think it can be overstated. I mean, it really is, how do we care for our caregivers, and how do we, you know, we talk about this idea of resilience, but all of us have a limit to our individual resilience. And what our caregivers have been through in the last year, is unlike anything they've been through in their career previously, and hopefully unlike anything they're going to be, you know, have to go through in their career in the future. And it has been a unique, incredibly fatiguing and in many cases emotionally distressing time. And so I consider this a strategic priority. I don't just think that this isn't just an operational issue. This isn't just an HR issue. It's a strategic priority for us to figure out how to rejuvenate and care for our care team, because they have given so much of themselves. And I think we're going to see over time that just like any, I don't think it's too strong a word to say any traumatic experience, that people are going to react differently over time and people are going to need to tap into different resources. And so strategically as a health system, we were really thinking about that because, as we move forward, if you look at, the predictions in terms of the healthcare workforce, a lot of areas are going to be at a premium. And if we can't be a place that can, retain and rejuvenate, our existing people, as well as be a place that reputationally people want to work because we care enough. It doesn't matter what else our other strategic objectives are. We're not going to have the workforce to be successful. So that's actually lined out as a big strategic priority for us. Secondly, I touched on it previously, but just continuing our journey towards, what we think of as consumer essentiality. That means a lot of different things. Obviously, it means, some level of, digital enhancement. I think it means an access point strategy so that there's a lot of different, as everybody knows, there's a lot of different consumer segments and different patient segments and how they want to access the healthcare system. And we think we need to continue to broaden our funnel so that no matter what the patient segment, if they need to access a healthcare need, that we have a place that's easy for them to access. So that continues to be a strategic objective on our map. And then the third thing, which we've already mentioned, is just to continue, evaluating our market and making some key strategic investment decisions. There's a lot of capital investment opportunity, in our marketplace. But with the margins and not-for-profit healthcare, you can't make a lot of wrong picks. And so we're in the process right now of really honing in on what our strategic capital investment priorities are going to be over the next 3 years.
And you hit this last point really well on, and this is why scale has become so important. And I know 2.1 billion serious scale, even though maybe compared to some others, it's not. But you at least have some room for error. And if you're a smaller system, you have no room for error in these big capital choices. You make one bad choice, and you're economically in horrible straits, and have to look at merging and so forth. So your point on only being able to take so many big bets and be careful in how you allocate capital is and strategy is such an important point. Thank you. Dr. Neil, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just a pleasure to get a chance to visit with you.
I appreciate it, Scott. Thank you for your time.